And welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington, and here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan and the rest of the region this Thursday, January 23rd, 2025. South Sudan bans the use of TikTok and Facebook for at least a month after online reports sparked violence in the capital.
If you live with them, you do not know them, who is against you, who is with you, then even you cannot know what to do.
And President Kiir orders the elimination of illegal roadblocks, but some argue they serve a useful purpose.
Without checkpoints, vehicles carrying goods are no longer inspected, making it easy to smuggle harmful items into Juba. For me, the removal of checkpoints brings increased crime risks.
These stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. South Sudan's National Communications Authority has ordered a Facebook and TikTok shutdown for at least 30 days to control misinformation following reports of Sudanese troops killing South Sudanese civilians. Some South Sudanese social media users say the shutdown will impact their personal and business communications, while others say the decision will de-escalate tensions related to the alleged killings in Sudan. Mamer Abraham Kwat reports for VOA from Malakal.
South Sudan's National Communications Authority instructed telecommunications companies to suspend Facebook and TikTok as of Wednesday night. Telecommunications companies such as MTN and Zain shared circulars informing users of the action. The country's media regulator says online posts escalated tensions across the country through the sharing of videos showing what appeared to be Sudan Armed Forces troops killing South Sudanese civilians after the army took control of Wad Madani in Sudan. Sisi Alam is not pleased with the government's decision.
First of all, it didn't affect me so much because these days we use the internet for communication, for business, for even official work. It's going to be a bit hard for me to connect with my family through the internet. It's actually very sad seeing such videos that are being posted online. If there was a filter, it would have been much better before publishing such kind of videos.
Lem Munjog, who lives in Malakal, says the government has cut itself off from information by shutting down TikTok and Facebook. He says the government should target individual social media accounts that spread hate speech and allow the free flow of information on social media.
If you live with them, you do not know them, who is against you, who is with you, then even you cannot know what to do. So it's better to leave the social media operating all the time in South Sudan, because it has become a source of getting information. And to get information is the best thing in this world. You cannot live in current modern world without information.
Boyn Lam disagrees. He argues South Sudanese do not make money from social media platforms and they are a distraction to the youth. He says the Facebook and TikTok shutdown will not affect him.
There is a different platform that you can communicate because the media is not only Facebook and TikTok. Even though they blog it, it's not like that is a big thing that they took down. So you go to TikTok and then it is not helpful even, by the way. You can spend your full day, you are on TikTok, Facebook also. It's still a distraction for the youth if we are telling us the truth. It cannot be productive because you cannot learn something new rather than to get negative words there from Facebook. So if you really want to learn something, you can go to different platforms.
Under the order, Facebook and TikTok are suspended for a minimum of 30 days and a maximum of 90 days. The communications authority says it will revoke the order as soon as the tensions ease, adding that the order is aimed at public safety and the mental health of vulnerable people. After the videos of the killing circulated last week, violent protests broke out in Juba and other cities, with attacks on Sudanese citizens and businesses they own. At least 12 people died in the protest and shops were looted. The South Sudan government deployed forces to protect Sudanese traders, some of whom were attacked, and arrested hundreds of suspected looters. On Tuesday, about 600 suspected looters escaped detention, and police recaptured more than 400 of them. The Sudanese armed forces captured the town of Wad Madani from the paramilitary rapid support forces early this month. The RSF and the National Army have been fighting a bitter war for control of the country for nearly 2 years. The United Nations say the conflict has created the world's biggest displacement crisis, and thousands of Sudanese have fled to South Sudan, with many opening businesses in the country. For VOA News, I am Amer Ibrahim Kouad, reporting from the Upper Nile State's capital, Malakal.
South Sudanese businessman Cho Lam, a board member with the South Sudan Oil and Gas Corporation, who's been in Washington here to attend President Donald Trump's inaugural this week, is here with us now in the studio to comment on the South Sudan social media ban and also to fill us in on some of the meetings he's had here while attending the inaugural and some other events in the United States. Thanks for coming in, Cho.
Thank you very much for having me.
First, how do you think the shutdown of the TikTok and Facebook, that ban, will affect people in South Sudan? And do you think it's warranted by the government?
Thank you very much for having me again. I guess the idea of the ban, let's discuss it in general. What caused the ban to happen? The killing of innocent South Sudanese citizen in Sudan, in Al-Wad Madani, in Al Jazeera, by Sudanese men in uniform with guns, caused that problem. And from the idea of what happened is not allegedly, let me correct that, it happened and there's evidence.
Okay.
What happened?
We say it that way because we couldn't confirm it.
Okay, no problem. But, you know, people have come out with names and family members who lost people from there. The atrocities committed in Wad Madani is inhumane, is barbaric. It violates all human rights of South Sudanese. These were refugees. These are people who were not part of the war.
Right.
And these were innocent people. And I think the Sudanese or SAF or whoever who was wearing these uniforms and taped it is a problem that needs to be looked into by all human rights organization. And we're looking for that to take place. What happened in Juba?
We should probably just say, too, you know, you saying that and making that clear does not mean you're taking sides by any stretch.
No, it's just human rights. It's a human rights thing. The atrocities committed, carried out in Wad Madani, videoed and shared intentionally, it has a ripple effect. And what happened in Juba, it was an emotional reaction that caused by wounds from the war that just recent wars that have happened before independence. So when we see things like that, people react. And it was an emotional reaction, not carried by the government, carried by civilians who were remembered by these atrocities. And the government did what it could. The government, through the Ministry of Interior, imposed curfews, protected Sudanese nationals. They even moved some of them to safer areas.
So it was a security measure.
It was a security measure. So the ban that is happening now in South Sudan, it was a way for the South Sudanese government to protect Sudanese national. It's going beyond what has happened in the north. What happened in the north, we don't know yet if these people have been captured or what has been what happened. But the government of South Sudan is trying to show the world that it's doing what it could.
Okay.
Even the effect that is happening now is against South Sudanese citizen. It's not against Sudanese citizen. So it's gone beyond its effort to see what they could do to protect South Sudanese and bring calm until the right time for the lifting to happen.
Okay, well, thanks for sharing that. I want to move on with a couple other questions. You met with House Speaker Mike Johnson in person yesterday. Wow.
Correct.
What are your impressions of how the Republican-controlled Congress and the new Trump administration will affect U.S. policy toward Africa and you know, South Sudan, too?
Thank you very much for mentioning that. I came intentionally to meet with the new administration. And Speaker Mike Johnson, who gave me time to meet with him in a very busy schedule to discuss South Sudan in particular, but also the new administration policy towards Africa. South Sudan, it's a country that could offer the United States and the world so much. from its minerals, from its resources, from its arable land. And we want to look at creating a win-win situation between the two countries. South Sudan is not looking for aid. It's not looking for sympathy. We're looking at creating a space where we could create a win-win situation for all the nationals, South Sudanese and the American nationals, equally. And Speaker Mike Johnson was very clear in his messaging, and he said he would work very hard with the Secretary of State, with the new Trump administration, to see how we can create that. That's different language and different approach from the previous administration. We're looking forward to creating that and seeing how we can bring South Sudanese to kind of win and be in right space to be able to take advantage of the resources.
One more quick question, and speaking of the Trump administration, you shared this with me. We just saw a tweet from Elon Musk, who's in charge of this efficiency government new role that he's, you know, like, you know, Mr. Trump's right-hand man, basically.
Correct.
And he said in that tweet, $784 million, U.S. taxpayer dollars, for a new U.S. embassy in Juba in 2023, which means not on Trump's watch. This is not a reasonable expenditure. So does that mean this is kaput now?
Well, you know, if you look at the embassy in Juba, this is an old embassy that has been there, that's been paid for by taxpayers. But looking forward to creating the right atmosphere between the two countries, you know, this is something the U.S. government needs to look into. But for us to be able to create the space needed and to attract the right investors, mm-hmm. they need to have an embassy that represent the United States in Juba. So if you cut it, I mean, is that really the right approach when we could even create trillions or billions and trillions of dollars from South Sudan if we look at how do we extract these right minerals, the oil, the arable land? How do we take advantage of that? You know, South Sudan can even pay for that embassy on its own money if we can bring in U.S. technologies, U.S. businesses to come and invest in South Sudan. We can make, you know, $1 billion a month out of the resources that are available in South Sudan. So let's look
you
at it in that way.
You got the oil pumping again.
The oil is pumping, but we could pump more. There's more that the South Sudan can offer if we create the right atmosphere for a win-win situation.
All right. Well, thanks for sharing your thoughts. That was very illuminating.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks again for being here. That's Chol Lama, a businessman from Juba. We really appreciate your thoughts. So we're just going to keep moving on. Again, thanks for being in the studio.
Thank you.
The removal of illegal roadblocks in South Sudan has sparked a wider debate among communities, traders, and authorities. While many commuters, including traders, are embracing lower costs and smoother travel, others fear the decision will compromise security and enforcement measures. Sheila Pony has that story for us from Juba.
Last year, President Salva Kiir ordered the removal of illegal checkpoints along major highways across the country, including the Juba Bor Road, a major route into the capital. The presidential order was made to improve road access, reduce travel delays, and boost commerce. The move was in keeping with resolutions made during the 8th Governors Forum, which called on the national, state, and local administrators to remove all illegal checkpoints along the national roads and rivers, Sobat, such as the Nile, Sobat, and Nam. Another resolution banned illegal tax collection along roads and waterways to promote trade and reduce the burden on travelers and traders. Central Equatorial State Minister of Local Government and Law Enforcement, Leon Abe Brown, says complaints were coming in from all directions.
The illegal checkpoints, which is causing a lot of taxes in travelers' cars, of course, it gives a contribution of a high rate. Complaints from the business community as well as our people also in rising of the prices at the market. Therefore, the government has come with that idea of barring all illegal checkpoints, which is causes to that. Now, in the process, it was an error that the legal checkpoints, which controls local collections, movement of our people within the counties has gone out, causes a problem. It is just the government to look into it.
The illegal roadblocks highlighted the low morale among security personnel, with reports of some soldiers abandoning their posts or setting up roadblocks to extort money from travelers after not being paid by the government for several months. An Ethiopian businessman in Central Equatoria State's Terekeka County shared his frustration over the cost of the illegal checkpoints. He didn't want to give his name because of safety concerns.
And it depends. Sometimes you find someone who actually know you, because we have stayed long here, right? So we go to use it to some of them. And sometimes they make it fair, but the average amount you pay on one checkpoint is like 50,000. So what do you expect me to put down, man? I have to put it on the price of the goods. That increases.
Keji is a businesswoman transporting fish from Terekeka to Juba County. She didn't want to give her full name for safety fears, but says there is a downside to the eliminating checkpoints.
Without checkpoints, vehicles carrying goods are no longer inspected, making it easy to smuggle harmful items into Juba. For me, the removal of checkpoints brings increased crime risks.
Local businessman Gerald, who also didn't want to give his full name, does not see it that way.
The presidential degree has brought up abruptly, and then it closed the checkpoint, and now the local population of our area, they are suffering, both human and their animals.
South Sudan's People's Defense Forces spokesperson, Major General Lul Rai, acknowledged that there are security concerns, but reassured citizens the illegal roadblocks will be eliminated.
We have a standby force that has been given sole responsibility of dismantling again any roadblocks that had been erected illegally.
For VOA News, I am Sheila Pony.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up on South Sudan in Focus, Kenyan health officials implement new procedures in response to a growing number of Mpox cases. You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. As Mpox cases continue to spread across Africa, Kenyan health officials say they have implemented a raft of preparedness and response measures to swiftly detect and halt the viral disease advances. From the Kenyan capital, Nairobi, Ruben Chama reports.
Speaking Thursday to reporters in Nairobi, health officials noted the rising number and geographic spread of Mpox cases, especially from the clade 1B variant of the virus. Mary Modoni Muriuki is Kenya's principal secretary at the State Department of Public Health.
Regarding the current situation in Kenya, Mpox remains a very, very big threat, not just in Kenya, but the East Africa region. In the past 1 week, we have confirmed 5 new cases. This brings the total number of Mpox cases in the country to 36 from across 12 counties.
Kenya, along with Burundi, Rwanda, and Uganda, have confirmed cases of the clade 1B Mpox variant, which was first detected in the Democratic Republic of the Congo and is thought to be more severe and transmissible than earlier variants. The rapid spread of clade 1B was part of the reason the World Health Organization declared the Mpox outbreak a public health emergency of international concern last August. With support from the WHO and other partners, Kenya has developed an Mpox National Preparedness and Response Plan. The plan has identified high-risk counties along the Northern Corridor, a busy transport route from the Kenya-Uganda border to the port city of Mombasa, and rapid response teams have been deployed to intensify surveillance. Luigi Aquino is the chief of health at UNICEF in Kenya.
The caseload of mpox in the region is very high. We are more and more exposed to acute events, which can be outbreaks or other emergencies. And I think the role of all of us is going to be crucial for a very simple reason. Disease do not spare children. And as a United Nations Children Fund, we are here to help promoting and protecting the rights of children.
As mpox cases rise across the continent, public health experts say more needs to be done to dispel myths surrounding the outbreak. Abdurrahmane Diallo is the WHO representative in Kenya.
While strides have been made in controlling the disease, one of the most persistent challenges we face is the battle against misinformation and disinformation. Misleading information about mpox has the potential to erode public trust, delay health-seeking behaviors, and fuel stigma against those affected, unfortunately.
Some of the myths say mpox only affects people in certain regions, such as the Eastern DRC. Other myths involve conspiracy theories about the vaccine recently developed to fight mpox. The United States is among major donors that have committed billions of dollars to support the global response to the mpox outbreak. Mpox cases have also been found in Sweden, Thailand, the United Kingdom, Belgium, Canada, and the United States. The patients had recently traveled to Africa. Mpox is an infectious disease caused by a virus transmitted from animals to humans, with cases often found close to tropical rainforests with animals that carry the virus. It can also spread from humans to humans through close physical contact. In some cases, it can be fatal. Ruben Chama, VOA News, Nairobi.
Civilians in Gabon are being encouraged this month to register to take part as voters in presidential elections scheduled for August. The planned elections are envisioned to end a two-year transition to civilian rule. Voter registration began January 2nd and is due to conclude at the end of the month. Gabon's political opposition says voter registration has not been as robust as expected because civilians believe that transitional president General Brice Clotaire Oligui Nguema wants to confiscate power, assertions that Nguema denies. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from neighboring Cameroon.
Officials in Chad say opposition leaders assembled Wednesday in the capital N'Djamena to protest legislative election results published Tuesday by the Constitutional Council, the Central African nation's highest court. Clement Sianka, spokesperson of Chad's National Assembly of Democrats, an opposition political party that participated in the December 29 polls, says he took part in the protest because his party is surprised that the council refused to annul the elections marred by fraud, low voter participation, and intimidation of civilians Chad's military considered to be opposition supporters.
Si vous regardez les candidats, les partis politiques n'ont droit à aucun procès.
Sianka says by ordering government troops to chase opposition party representatives from polling stations, Chad's president, Mahamat Idriss Déby, who in December declared himself as Field Marshal, the highest rank in Chad's military, once more sent a strong message to civilians that he wants to take power at any cost and continue the three-decade rule begun by his father, Idriss Déby Itno. Sianka said fraud was alarming, with ballot boxes confiscated and stuffed by supporters of Déby's Patriotic Salvation Movement, or MPS party, in front of helpless civilians. He said the MPS party declared its candidates as winners in towns and villages where civilians obeyed opposition boycott calls and elections did not take place. Sianka spoke on Chad State TV Wednesday. According to the final results published by the country's Constitutional Council Tuesday, the MPS won 124 seats in the 188-member National Assembly. 64 women were voted in as lawmakers, according to the official results, an increase of 36 women over Chad's last legislative period, which ended in 2011. Chad says financial difficulties had made it impossible for legislative polls to be held since 2011. The opposition says the polls, the first in over a decade, should be set aside because most of Chad's roughly 8.3 million voters heeded opposition calls for a boycott. There were no indications the polls were to be free, fair and transparent, as civilians already knew that Deby wanted to confiscate power, Chad's opposition says. However, Chad's Constitutional Council says voter turnout was over 50% and the elections were peaceful with no major incidents that could affect the outcome of polls. Chad's Political Actors Consultation Group, or GCAP, a coalition of several dozen political parties, on Wednesday said democracy was stifled during Chad's three-year transition period. GCAP says Deby, who took power as a military ruler in 2021, persecutes critical opposition leaders to maintain the rule of his father, longtime President Idris Deby Itno's rule. Idris Deby spent three decades in power until he died while fighting rebels in April 2021. GCAP says Deby should hand power to a civilian capable of managing another transition during which transparent elections will be organized for a return to democratic rule. Moki Edwin Kinzuka, VOA News, Yaoundé.
And that wraps it up for us this Thursday. We invite you to check out voaafrica.com for all your favorite programs and news updates. If you somehow missed this broadcast, you can just head on over to www.voaafrica.com/South Sudan. I'm your host, Carol Van Dam in Washington. On behalf of our engineer, Keela Williams, producer Kwame Afori, and our special guest, Chal Lam, thanks for joining us. We'll hoping to talk to you again tomorrow evening on another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Next, an editorial reflecting American ideals and institutions.
On the third Monday of each January, Americans honor the memory of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. A Baptist minister from the southern state of Alabama, Dr. King was a leader in the U.S. civil rights movement, advocating social change through nonviolent means. On January 15th, he would have turned 96 years old. The country young Martin was born into was one of racial segregation and discrimination by design. Most southern states were governed by so-called Jim Crow laws, local and state legislation that codified and enforced segregation and behavior of the non-white population. But Dr. King believed in the biblical proposition that all people are created equal in the image of God. In keeping with the motto he chose for his civil rights movement, he set out to redeem the soul of America, believing that change does not roll in on wheels of inevitability but comes through continuous struggle. Dr. King organized and participated in mass action boycotts, sit-ins, peaceful marches, and other nonviolent acts of civil disobedience. Dr. King once stated that an individual who breaks a law that conscience tells him is unjust and who willingly accepts the penalty of imprisonment in order to arouse the conscience of the community over its injustice is in reality expressing the highest respect for the law. And so activists sometimes deliberately but peacefully and respectfully broke laws aimed at segregating the white citizenry from the non-white, thus hoping to bring attention to the inherent unfairness of such legislation. Dr. King's greatest achievements came with the passage of the 1964 Civil Rights Act, which outlawed employment discrimination and segregation in public places, and the 1965 Voting Rights Act. These two victories had a major impact not only on the United States, but around the world. Dr. King once said that darkness cannot drive out darkness. Only light can do that. Hate cannot drive out hate. Only love can do that. These words guided his life's work, but ultimately another's hatred cost him his life at a young age. He was 39 years old when an assassin's bullet cut him down on April 4th, 1968. But his legacy lives on. In time, all segregationist laws were repealed, and discrimination is a legally punishable and punished offense. Dr. King's life is well summed up in his own words. The quality, not the longevity, of one's life is what is important.
That was an editorial reflecting American ideals and institutions.